podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a Triad production. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor. In today's episode, we will resume our conversation with Dr. William Parham, the director of the National Basketball Players Association's Mental Health and Wellness Department. In our last episode, we discussed the understanding of mental health on a continuum and its importance as a tool for detection and prevention in an athlete's life. How a multidimensional assessment can recognize the variables that contribute to the larger focus of who they are as a human, and understanding athletes contextually, and how adverse childhood experiences, as well as socioeconomic and political factors, are impacting athletes. We'll resume our talk today by discussing the resistance behind integrating mental health and wellness programs into the sports systems, and how our own early childhood experiences and traumas create an avoidance to addressing mental health issues. You know, it's interesting, as psychologists, we both know that sometimes the idea is if you address it or speak about it, it's going to make it happen. You know, yes. We might say, hey, you know, don't talk about suicide because someone's going to follow through, or don't talk to your children about sex because they're going to go act that out, or don't talk about drugs because they're going to get the idea of starting to use. Right. And what you're saying is just, and what we know is just really the opposite. And it's just, it's just an ignorance and naivete around this. And maybe what you're saying right here for people to understand is if we can talk about these things and open up the necessary boxes, we're actually not going to have performance decline, but we're going to have performance be enhanced. And I also know that, you know, those that are owners and organizations, they sometimes just lack the ability to know what to do once it might be open. So they're afraid to open it. That's oftentimes why parents, you know, don't raise things, because then, you know, if I speak about it, then I've got to address it. And then what do I do? Or also, like you said, for the players too, sometimes these players have gotten so used to suppressing so many things in order to be, you know, to be excellent. Or you've talked about how they've used an edge or a chip on their shoulder to be their motivation. And that's what they've always gotten and been driven by for their success. That's all they know. Or maybe even the fear of vulnerability about opening up about some of these things. Yes. What's going to happen? Am I going to open the floodgate? And is my, you know, performance as an elite athlete, is that going to drop? Or what happens if people find out? Now it's going to be made public. So I've got this small career in terms of time, 4.5, 5, 6 years, maybe 3 years in football, but whatever. What if I can just suck it up, contain it, do my best, get on the other side of it, but make the most of it?
That's right.
All that goes into it, doesn't it?
It goes into it. And not only that, what I want to highlight also, what you're pointing out, which I don't want to miss. You talk about parents not asking those tough questions.
Yeah.
In part because they don't know what to do once they get an answer that they don't want to really hear.
Right.
But the other thing I want to point out, it very easily can trigger their own stuff.
Yeah, good reminder. Can you expand upon that,
really,
please?
They really don't want to deal with at all.
Expand upon that piece. So it's not just it's not just an absence of skills and strategies to deal with it. They get triggered as well. Say more.
There's
about
no
that, please.
Question. I am convinced, having worked with a number of families when I was in private practice, that some of them need information. Like, what is this? I don't quite get it.
Yeah.
I've understood, though, and really have come to the conclusion, more parents get it than they really let on. They don't want to talk about it because it's uncomfortable.
Yeah.
They don't want to have the social stigma within the community that this family has a stain on it. Somehow the word gets out that my son or daughter is X, Y, or Z.
Right.
But more importantly, as I mentioned earlier with the ACE study, many of us are carrying around our own baggage, subject to be triggered by anything, including what's going on in your kids. Why? Because where are the kids getting some of that stuff from? The emotional and other leakage.
That's right.
The parents think that they are containing, that they are not. And so it really forces parents and organizational leaders to be a reflection in the mirror.
Yeah.
And I often say two things. A person will never see their reflection in running water. It is only when the water is still will their reflected image begin to emerge.
Yeah, really good.
I also add, if you don't like the reflection in the mirror, it's not the fault of the mirror.
Yeah.
there's stuff that you have to examine, and we have the privilege of not having to do so. Why? Because all the owners, they're quite successful objectively, but carrying around stuff. The parents that we're talking about, well, you look at objective markers, they're reasonably successful. When you look at athletes, they've achieved markers of success.
Yeah.
So the question is, if I've, the evidence that I have is if I can achieve excellence as an athlete by all objective markers without talking about quote unquote my stuff.
Yeah.
What evidence do I have that if I talk about my stuff and get some perspective on it, what evidence do I have that that's going to translate into more excellence?
Yes.
We are, in essence, what we call a doubting Thomas, sort of a story from the Bible, if you will. I need to have proof.
Yeah.
Not conjecture, not philosophy. Proof. And my proof is despite the adverse childhood experiences, I've attained a level of success by objective markers.
Yeah.
Why would I do anything but continue to contain, hold down, deny, dismiss, act as if nothing happened? And that strategy works until you have something like a COVID.
That's right.
Or this rise in social justice or major events that force you to reconcile that which you've been carrying around all this time.
Bill, go down this path with me just a wee bit more, if you would. I love what you're saying. You know, you're talking about the age of these athletes, and we look at some of them and they look like, you know, grown men and grown women, but these are athletes still in their late teens and their 20s.
Absolutely.
These are still very formative years. Most of us don't have a frontal lobe fully developed until we're about 24, 25. So
absolutely,
these athletes are so dependent upon guidance.
Absolutely.
And what you're encouraging here is that this responsible look at, what are we raising? Are we raising athletes? Or are we raising human beings that happen to have a phenomenal God-given talent in certain realms of art, it's of athletics.
Absolutely.
Or other things? And I think what you're advocating for here is to put this in the proper perspective. If we can look at the developmental part of it first, that athletic performance will just naturally evolve the way that it's designed to evolve if we put that human focus in place first. And we are responsible for the guidance of these children that are so dependent upon us.
There's no question about that. And that actually dovetails into another philosophy that I've used clinically for many, many years.
Please.
The systems in which you and I were trained, the mental health system, it has been very Eurocentric, has followed a model of pathology, like what's missing.
Yeah.
And we have developed a language as professionals. We can build somebody's confidence. That's, for me, nonsense. When you really believe what we've been taught, the tabula rasa notion, you're born as a blank slate in life as a result of family, community, schools, churches, etc. It's about putting into this blank slate facts, figures, information, in hopes that he or she fills up with that data.
Right.
And when they get to be about 18 to 20, they have enough to make some decisions, but as they get to be 30, 40, 50 and on, they get more stuff.
Right.
To come up to speed. But if you understand the fundamental premise of that, you are promised that your entire life, you are not good enough.
Yes.
You are something missing. That is the number one reason we have issues. There's a void, we're not coming up to speed, got to fill in the gaps. Mm-hmm. 2/3 of the Western world and some of the other countries, Africa, traditional Asian cultures, believe something totally different. They don't believe in that tabula rasa, we have to fill in the gaps. I lead a life of emptiness and pull into, let's fill up. They believe that at the time you were born, you have everything you need. And that life, as a result of the same socialization with family, communities, churches, schools, et cetera. Life is around surrounding that entity to bring out of it that which it already possesses.
Yeah.
So I teach my student, for example, I'm not going to teach you anything. And they look at me like, well, why am I in class? I said, because I'm going to help you discover that which you already know and believe to be true in your life.
Yeah.
But maybe have been afraid to tap into. They are possession and it's about discovery.
Yeah.
And to get to your point, if you can position young folk to get curiosity, mm-hmm. Bill Russell in this book, Bill Russell, 11-time NBA champion, in his book, Russell's Rule, says something that it really struck me. Having talent and ability is important. Going to practice is important. But curiosity is the oxygen of all success and accomplishment. Curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how does this work? How do I work? How do I put the two together and really discover something magical?
No, I love that because what you're talking about here, when you look at that curiosity, what a great perspective. And children rely upon us for this kind of guidance and direction. What if parents, teachers, coaches, what if that was their primary driven approach to, hey, I want to be curious with you, young athlete, young student, whoever it may be, about what your inherently designed gifts and talents and abilities are. We get to uncover them, we get to discover them, and we get to buff the heck out of them so you can experience the life that you were to experience, bless others by being able to steward those well, have fulfillment in your own life by the expression of these.
Yes.
And my goal and my task is to help you get curious as well. Let's do it together and let's watch and see what emerges. It's going to be the best painters. It's going to be the best athletes. All those gifts are going to naturally emerge if that's in place first.
Absolutely. And it's an invitation for coaches, for parents.
Yes.
To reconnect to the curiosity gene that they've had and have never lost. They've medicated themselves into being comfortable.
Yeah.
But the curiosity and the genius now they have at 40 and 50 and 60 years old is scary exciting.
That's pretty good. So there may be a little bit of a delay in terms of curiosity, but instead of avoiding those things that might trigger us when we have to address challenging things in our kids, we might have a second chance in the later decades of our life to kind of get curious in ways that no one ever got curious with us before and maybe discover some things in our later years that we get to manifest now in a really cool way.
There's no question about it. In fact, in the whole area of trauma, there's a concept called post-traumatic growth.
Yes.
In short, it means you will not find a traumatic experience that doesn't give birth to or open a portal to some insider discovery that's going to be useful as you move forward.
Yeah, I really like that. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Behavioral and mental health professionals provide critical support to our communities in a time when our communities need it more than ever. But they need support too, to continue their education, to connect with colleagues, and to advance their career. And so we've launched Triad, the hub for behavioral and mental health professionals. At Triad, you'll find education, community, and career resources for both current and aspiring behavioral and mental health professionals, all curated specifically for you and all for free. Visit us at hellotriad.com/BHT to register for your free professional account. Again, that's hellotriad.com/BHT. Come join the community today.
You've emphasized, and we're talking about here, mental health being the missing link in maximizing one's true potential. In fact, you've got a visual. You use your hand to demonstrate how being mentally healthy can lock everything in place for an athlete and help them push through and power through things in their lives. Share and explain this illustration with us, would you?
Like I have, if I have my hand and encourage the audience, open their hand, fingers spread apart. If somebody were to grab one of those fingers, they could snap it off and break it because there's nothing supporting it.
Yeah.
Now, flip to page 2. Spread out your fingers again and roll down your baby finger, and that's your physical health and wellness. knock down your ring finger. That's your nutritional health and wellness. Knock down your middle finger. That's your restorative health and wellness, sleep, rest. Your pointer is reading the playbook, going to practice. The fifth is your mental health and wellness. And when you put those down and bring your thumb across your fist,
that's so good.
Not only is that hand now protected, but you have a unified force to push through any challenge that life presents. It is the absolute missing link.
You just gave us right there a way to assess our lives in a balanced way. We can't just say, well, just let's take one, because one is, like you said, is vulnerable by itself. It could be snapped off. But you gave us an encouragement right there too, and a visual I liked, that we get to take a look at each one of these individually and then lock them together in a way say, hey, how balanced am I and how strong am I to push through some of these things? Yeah, really good. You said earlier in our show today, you know, some of the GOAT performances, the greatest of all time performances. You know, I know that while some athletes, world-class performances, despite their mental health issues and their clinically diagnosable disorders, like the Michael Phelps and the Kevin Loves and the Simone Biles and Naomi Osakas, and while we know that sound mental health isn't a prerequisite for performances at this level, it goes without saying that an athlete's good mental health, those athletes with good mental health stand a better chance of performing well, particularly over the long term. And in our conversation together, you were saying that you think that we've seen some GOAT performances thus far. You say that we haven't even seen possibly some of the greatest performances of all time being witnessed, but are encouraging that if we can have the mental health as a foundation, these are yet to be witnessed and yet to come.
Absolutely. I solely believe that. In fact, I made that observation probably about 15, 20 years ago when I saw athletes performing who I knew personally.
Okay.
Had some very major struggles. And I'm scratching my head going, gosh, if they're carrying around that kind of ankle weight.
Yes.
And still doing what they're doing. Whoa, what if they can get rid of it? But the other thing that I want to keep in mind, and I say this with all due reverence to athletes. Athletes, because they want to be great, society wants them to be great, their fans want them to be great. One of the possible pitfalls is that they become that athlete, that identity. You say Michael Phelps, you say Kobe, you say MJ.
Yeah.
You automatically know who they are. You say any of the entertainers, Michael Jackson. I mean, you just know
yes,
who they are. You don't have to say anymore. And sometimes athletes take on that identity. And when the fans stop cheering and their identity is gone, it's who? What are you talking about?
Yes.
Where I'm going with this, if we can invest in their health and wellness,
yeah,
get into that curiosity genes, tap onto mental health and wellness, what we begin to see is an easier transition that once this is over, it's no longer my identity, it's who I am.
Yes.
But the other thing I want to see, you mentioned Simone Biles.
Yeah.
So I use that as an example.
Please.
Understand that she is the one lone survivor of Larry Nassar, active gymnast, from sexual abuse that she's been public about. And operating within a system of USA Gymnastics, who knew about it? She's a young teenager. She's a woman, a young girl. She's African-American, holding down a secret, colluding, and the system was colluding with this.
Yeah.
That's pressure that people don't appreciate.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, she's doing stuff that people see as miraculous.
Mm. Despite all of that. Unbelievable.
The courage there is just enormous.
Yeah, phenomenal.
We've talked about athletes in the past. When you look at some of the athletes who we can give resources to, we have a story. Keon Dooley, Derek Anderson, homeless at age 11 year career in the NBA. I mean, I could go on and on.
Mm-hmm.
These stories of triumph,
mm-hmm,
opportunities to really say, yeah, life wasn't so good. It didn't get me down. And boy, if you can invest in me and I can invest in myself, you haven't yet seen what I can do.
That's right.
And I'm excited about that. And that's a very sacred journey I enjoy on with athletes.
Yeah.
Where I've had the opportunity to work with, it's just tremendous.
I love this right here because I think, you know, what we're doing now is identifying how to respond to those athletes that are now coming out with these issues around mental health that have been around a long time.
Absolutely.
But that's more of a tertiary intervention. And I know what you're encouraging here is the recognition that an athlete's mental health as the core component of kind of a foundational component of a healthy sports system in its entirety and the athlete's life, starting when they're kids, and first getting them, you know, involved in sports. Give a word again. You talked a little bit earlier in our time today, but give another word today to our young athletes, to their coaches, to the parents, even to the society and fans that are going to be supporting these athletes about the importance of addressing these mental health issues from the very beginning.
Well, the facts are, and the words I'll leave with everybody, mental health and wellness is something that we all have. Nobody doesn't have it.
Right.
The question is, what do you do with it? And we've all made choices to not talk about it. I think conversations need to continue to elevate and normalize. This is part of who I am. Mm-hmm. If you're really interested in me and my talent, it's the whole package. You have to come with it. You talk about play hard or go home. Well, play hard with me. Discover me. Give me resources to discover me. But that also is going to invite you as a parent, as a coach, as a GM, as an owner, to do the exact same thing. I think we can reframe this conversation about mental health and stigma. We can talk about this in another podcast, but to really understand stigma, you really have to understand.
Yeah, that's right.
What I call the menage a trois relationship between his psychiatry as it historically has been practiced, insurance companies, and big pharma, pharmaceuticals. Really have to understand the history and contemporary practice of all of those and how they work together because it's profitable. I think we can have the same sort of energy and synergy to talk about mental health and wellness from the beginning.
Yes.
As a critical component of who we are as human beings.
Yeah.
Absolutely critical.
Bill, I hope our listeners are appreciating what you're saying in a larger way. You're talking at a number of levels here today, not just in the assessment of mental health, mental wellness, and the multidimensional approach we can take, but you're also talking here about the multi-level growth possibilities that we can have. We're using sports as the focus for today, but it can be in any area. But let's say with sports just for a moment. You're talking about coaches and the players, their parents. These are growth opportunities that each one of us can benefit from if we start here. Maybe people haven't done it earlier in their lives, but they've got an athlete now or they're coaching one. And they, whatever opportunity for them to grow got foreclosed on early on. Sorry, but hey, maybe we've got an opportunity now. Right. To grow in a larger way and multiple people growing, not just the athlete. I love that emphasis.
Yeah. And to put it in a succinct way, we all grew up believing, particularly when we've had tragedies and traumas and chaos, that life happens to us.
Yes.
By me. I'm always advocating, while it feels like life happens to us, maybe life happens for us.
Yeah.
I often also, in my trauma class, I remind my students, there are times we are living a life and it feels like a shadow has been cast and we're in a dark space. That's real, that's authentic. But I remind them that wherever a shadow has been cast, it must mean that there's light nearby.
Yeah.
Because you can't cast a shadow without light.
Yeah.
And the light about which I speak is a light that all of us have, that untapped genius, that innate power and strength that we need to see in ourselves. And then we will begin to see it in others. And we have multiple lights shining. We have to wear sunglasses. It'll be so bright.
Yeah, I love that. I know we're kind of winding down for today here, but I love this evolution and these conversations regarding understanding the humanness and the mental health. In this case today, we're talking about athletes, but just humans in general. I love this conversation. You know, Bill, you gave us some great resources, and I would like to share these with our listeners. Folks, what Bill has given us includes the Adverse Childhood Experiences, the ACE study, West by West memoir, Shedding Light on Mental Health, a Washington Post article on one's mental health in Olympic athletes, Aon magazine on invisible tattoos, and also a great article that Bill wrote in the ISSP Sports Psychology Consensus document. There's a great HBO special called The Weight of Gold that you can check out. That's got some great resources around that and some athletes speaking directly to the topic that we're talking about today. And lastly, I'd like to talk about the Positive Coaching Alliance, which is out of Stanford University, Positive Coaching Alliance. They got some great things for youth sports, for parents and coaches. And I want to remind our listeners, all these resources can be found on our site, www.triadhq.com/behavioral-health-today. Well, Bill, it has been great to have you with us today. Thank you so much. And we're going to have you back and look forward to that time. But for today, I appreciate your time with us and what you shared.
Well, it's been my pleasure. I've appreciated the opportunity to invite the audience to consider that they really are more in control and that they too are sitting on their own inherent gifts, that it's not too late to tap. So thank you for your time and approach to this topic.
I really love that.
Flexibility.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you.
And to those listening in today, I trust you've enjoyed our time together as well with Dr. Parham. Thanks for being with us, and we'll look forward to seeing you next time on Behavior Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.